Welcome back, everyone, to Things You Learn in Therapy. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Trammell, licensed psychologist and an associate professor of psychology at Indiana University East, where I'm also the director of the Master's in Mental Health Counseling program. And I am excited to talk today with my guest, Rachel Elder, who is a couples therapist and relationship coach. And we're going to talk about all things couples therapy. And I'm really excited about this because, you know, the way that this podcast kind of started was I was thinking about the constant, I do feel just this tiny bit of pressure. I think a lot of folks in the mental health therapy field feel that there is such a need for, you know, great information to help folks. There's need for, you know, more slots on my schedule to see more folks. That just the mental health needs right now are great. And I feel that pressure and realized maybe podcasting could help bring some tools to the person out there who may be on the wait list and the person out there who is struggling in their relationship with a partner. And maybe there are some tools that we can share in a podcast, knowing that a podcast is not going to replace therapy, right? So we're going to talk about couples therapy today, what to expect, what are common things that you might experience, but this doesn't replace couples therapy. I think both Rachel and I would say that, if you're really struggling in your relationship, then it's probably time to find a good therapist in your area. And even if there's none available, put yourself on the wait list, because if you're feeling it now, even if things get better, you'll still kind of need it later. And maybe we'll kind of talk about that a little bit here too. But okay, so before we jump into all of that, Rachel, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about you and the work you do, and then tell us one fun thing about you.
Okay. So I'm a couples therapist and a relationship coach. So I practice, or I have my own therapy practice. It's virtual completely, in Seattle, Washington. So I serve couples in the Washington state area. And then I do coaching virtually as well, all over. And those look a little bit different. We could talk about that if you'd like me to, but, I love this work. I often have people ask me like, why do you do this? But I honestly, everything led me to working with couples and relationships. My whole life has been working up to that. And I love it. Even on the really stressful days where I tell my husband, like, I don't know if I can go to work tomorrow. I am depleted. I'm exhausted. Yeah. I am so over some of these challenges, but something always re-sparks me and says, okay, wake up and do it again tomorrow. Something fun about me. This used to be my go-to, like in elementary school, and like two truths and a lie. I am technically dual citizenship. I just never applied, but my father is American and my mother is British. And so I could be a dual citizen and live in England if I really wanted to, but it's nothing I've ever taken myself up on, but I am multicultural because I grew up in a multicultural house, which was something I learned in grad school that I didn't understand. I was like, my life makes sense now.
My whole life makes sense now that I've learned what multiculturalism is.
Yeah.
It's so true. Okay. That's great. That's so fun. Yeah. My daughter and I traveled to England for a study abroad with some undergrad students. Pre-pandemic. And that was the first time that I had actually been to England. We went to London.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I never realized like how cool my childhood was, because that was like our vacation. We would save up and we'd go to England to see my family. And I just thought, I was like, well, this is how we get together with our family. But realizing that was not relatable for a lot of people.
It's not what most people do. International travel.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my mom was telling me about how like she took all three of us on her own one time. And I travel with my little one to go see my family. And I'm like, how? I can't even imagine. She wants me to take her because my grandma's never met my little one. And she wants me to take her to England so she can meet her. And I'm like, I don't think I can handle that. I don't want to do an 8-hour flight. I don't even want to do the 4-hour flight I have to do to go see them.
Yeah. It's like, I am not sure I want to do that with a little child on a long flight trapped in a tiny space called a plane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, not at all.
All right. So let's dig in here. So, You specialize in working with couples. I think anyone who is currently in a relationship or anyone who maybe just got out of a relationship, we all know that couples therapy exists, mm-hmm. right? We kind of like have that thing that's kind of like, couples therapy exists out there for some people, right? And I kind of started in the intro here to say, there's lots of people have wait lists right now, right? I mean, therapy is, you know, we've got a lot of need and therapists are struggling to meet that need. And what I find in probably, I'm curious if you experience this too, is that folks are like, I don't want to put my name on a wait list because I need help right now. Mm-hmm. Right. So they want help during the crisis or during the uptick of the symptoms. And they think, well, those symptoms aren't going to be there by the time my appointment comes.
Yeah.
And so I, maybe we start there and then we'll kind of talk about, you know, what couples therapy actually is and maybe some myths around what, mm-hmm. what couples therapy is. So yeah. Anyway, just what do you think, Rachel?
Well, so I'll talk about my experience with some of the couples that I work with. So what I have seen is whether you get on the wait list or you reach out to however many therapists, people find once they've got their name on a wait list or they have that first scheduled appointment, they actually find some relief, not all the relief, but a little bit, because you've taken that first action step to say, we need help. We can't manage this on our own. We need an outside perspective and we've got ourselves something scheduled, even if it's 2 months out or not happening immediately. So I would encourage anyone, get on the wait list, keep reaching out, but don't just take any therapist that has an opening. Make sure that who you're meeting with, you feel like they are either trained or have the personality that you feel like you can open up to. So I always offer free 20-minute consults because I want to make sure it's a good fit for my skill expertise, but I also want to make sure that the couple also can get a sense of who I am, even though it's only 20 minutes, not enough time, but get a sense of, okay, can we trust Rachel? Do we feel like we'll be able to show up and actually be transparent and honest with what's going on? And if it's not me, I just tell them like, that's okay. I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Let me know. I am in the field. I can figure out who has openings versus you messaging everyone on Psychology Today or anyone that you can find names to. Let me reduce that process for you and help support you that way.
It's so good. I think it's an important reminder for folks. I think most folks may, you know, not necessarily know how to find the right person, right? So maybe they just look on, you know, maybe they search up therapists in my area or psychologists in my area. But I usually find that word of mouth too, like finding out from other people who have gone to a therapist or like you're saying, connect with somebody who can then refer you to someone else, right? So connect with somebody who does a 30-minute consult. But that's an important part to realize that you're not going to connect with everyone and, making sure that it's someone that you can be real and authentic with and bring in the whole truth. That's the most important part.
Yep. Yeah. If you can't be open and honest in therapy with the person, it's not the right fit.
No, it's not the right fit. Yeah. Okay. So we've got these folks who, let's say that they are, you know, they have found that this is the right fit. When is the right time? You know, it's hard to coordinate schedules and, you know, maybe we're not that bad. We're not as bad as some other folks. Like, when should a couple be like, we should get on the wait list?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say the cliche phrase, at any time is the right time. I think couples counseling has that stigma that you go in when you're contemplating divorce, something terrible, tragic, very challenging has happened in your relationship. And that's when you seek out couples therapy.
Yep.
Or it's required to get married. Yeah, so you do right. That premarital work.
Yep.
Any relationship, dating, long-term, committed, whatever it is, couples therapy can be impactful. It is more, no, I don't want to say that. I find you can integrate what you're learning in couples therapy when you're not in the distress mode.
Mm-hmm.
So the sooner you can come in and learn some skills, the better. I kind of wish it was mandated that everyone who's like, okay, I'm going to get married now, let's make you do a few sessions so you just have some helpful skills, because your relationship's going to change throughout eternity. And if you can have skills that you can keep turning to over and over again in your relationship, it's going to help so that when the stressful moments, the huge life transitions come up, or the things that you never imagined would happen to your relationship happen, you can say, okay, let's utilize some of these communication, conflict management skills to navigate through this, and we'll seek out help if we really can't do it. So I think any time is the right time. What normally happens is people are in huge distress. And when you're in huge distress, you're usually reacting more than you are slowing down to really assess what you're needing, what's going on, what's going to be the best plan of action. So I sometimes find people will work with anyone, or they'll be like, oh, we'll work with you. And then I find out in the process, I'm really not the fit for what you're needing. And it can be hard to start over in therapy with someone else. So if you're in distress, slow yourself down a little bit, assess what's going on, what do you need, and who do you think is going to be the fit? That might be looking at some different couples modalities that are out there. So I'm Gottman trained. So I use Gottman primarily in my work, but there is emotionally focused therapy, PACT couples therapists. Doing a little bit of research before working with someone, I would suggest, but I know that's really hard to do when you're in that reactive state of we need help right now, before things dissolve.
And for someone who, you know, may think, hey, you know, I'm a really emotional person, and so an emotion focused clinician is probably best for me. It may not necessarily work that way, right?
Yeah. It's, I think this is where the reflection is really important, because you might be an emotional person, but you might need more skills to work with the emotions. And every couple's modality is going to teach you skills.
Yeah.
But it's important to kind of check it out. So I always tell people when they're on the consult with me, like, this is what I do. Yeah. This is how I work. And so you need to know that up front. But I would encourage you to look at these other modalities too, and make sure that what I do really speaks to what you're looking for. And if not, that's okay. Like there's a reason there's so many. They're all impactful, but you have to decide what's best for your relationship.
Okay, so tell us, what are some common things that people are sharing in couples therapy, right? So what would happen that a person would say, we're going to go see a therapist, right? At any time. So if you're listening and you're in a relationship and you haven't experienced anything, now is the right time.
Yeah.
And what are other common times that people are saying, we're showing up on your couch or on your Zoom link or whatever, whatever your virtual platform is.
Yeah. I call it the three C's. So communication, conflict, and connection issues. Most people come in because they're not communicating well, or they're having a lot of fights or misunderstandings, or they feel lonely. The passion's gone, the romance gone. They feel super disconnected. And all three of those areas impact each other. Usually if someone feels disconnected in their relationship, they're probably not talking and they're probably fighting a lot more.
Yeah.
So those are the three that I definitely see. Like anytime someone's sitting across from me, I'm like, okay, one of these areas, if not all of them, is occurring. And usually those are impacted by transitions. So the pandemic was one, becoming new parents, job changes, even people with elderly parents, how that impacts their relationship, or a boundary has been crossed in the relationship. So infidelity, affairs, cheating, or even someone wanting to open up the relationship. So those impact all three of those C's and are also some of the other common reasons couples are coming in for therapy.
So I think about the person who might be listening who is saying, yeah, I'm always talking to my spouse or partner about communication. Mm-hmm. And my partner just doesn't communicate. And then I kind of fall into this negative narrative in my head, right? Like, they're not communicating and I don't know what's going on for them. And then the story I make up in my head is just atrocious. So think about that person who's listening. When you talk about communication with couples, what are some common things you kind of help them learn when they're in therapy?
Yeah. One of the things I like to start with is that they can't just be communicating about what's going wrong or what's not going right. Communicating about that is important, but you also need to have positive, connective communication. So I like to talk a lot about, you know, building appreciation, affirmation, admiration back into the relationship, communicating your needs in a direct and specific manner, and balancing your communication of something that's going well and then focusing on something that could be going better. Because I think a lot of people come in, they just want to talk about all the things that aren't working, but that doesn't normally encourage your partner to want to do anything or feel receptive to your input. Yes. So starting them with, okay, well, what are the good things that you guys talk about? Do you do the highs and lows at dinner? Do you reflect on your day together at the end of the day? Are you only talking about the negative or the stressors in your life? Are you also talking about the positive, the joyful, the good moments as well? Because we need both in our communication.
It's so funny because I, you know, I know you also worked with adolescents prior to some of the work you did. And I think about, you know, all the work I do with parents, right? So I work with a lot of parents and a lot of teachers, and it's very similar, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like a very similar process of teaching about communication, right? Pay attention to how many negative words you're using, or, you know, what's the power of your words. And anyway, okay. So we're focusing there on communication. And then I think about the other person who might be listening in who's saying, yeah, I just don't really feel connected, but I can't quite get my spouse or my partner to understand what I mean by I don't feel connected, right? Let's say during the pandemic, let's say, right, where we were kind of quarantined, right? We were literally in the same space.
Yeah.
And we still may feel disconnected. So how do we help people understand this idea of emotional connectedness when it's like we're literally together? You know, I'm at home every night. I'm here during the day, or we work in the same house, we stay at home or whatever. I hear a lot of folks with this misunderstanding about what connection actually is. So can you help folks understand what are we talking about when we mean this third C, this connection piece?
Yeah, I like to break it down into three different categories. So there's physical connection, so sex, handholding, kissing, those physical actions, physical affection. There's the emotional connection, which is what you're talking about. These are the ways that you feel validated, that you feel understood, that you feel like your partner empathizes with you, that they get what you're feeling, what you're going through, and the mental connection. So this one isn't the one that typically stumps people, but this could be just like intellectual conversation, doing a hobby or working on something together, but something that activates your brain that you're doing alongside your partner. So when people say they're disconnected, I like to say, well, in what ways? It's typically all of them, but usually there's that emotional or physical one that's kind of the driver. But helping couples understand, okay, you each have specific needs when it comes to connection, and you may not have the same needs. Some of them will be similar, but part of the communication process with connection is communicating what you need and naming how your partner can support you in that, but also recognizing there are going to be times that they can't, or they're not in a place that they can do that right then and there. So is there a compromise that you can come up with, or is it possible to delay that need for a time while your partner works on whatever's impacting them, being able to step into that connection need that you have?
It's so good. Okay. So I'm just thinking about all the things that like couples may be thinking as they're considering, should we do this? Should we not do this?
I'm thinking I would say about, if you're considering it, you should probably just do it.
Right. You should just call, right? I mean, but you know, I really do think people spend a lot of time like negotiating this, you know. It's like, well, I don't know. How am I going to convince my partner to show up?
Yeah.
How are we going to do that?
Well, you have to tell them why it's important to you or why you feel like it would be helpful, but you also have to be open to hearing their thoughts. So if they say no, exploring what makes you say no, what makes you not on board for this decision. But also I teach a lot of couples this, the balance of being assertive versus aggressive. Some people kind of stronghold their partner of like, well, if we don't do this, like it's over, or if we don't do this, this is not going to be good for us. But actually shifting and communicating why it's important to you and being open to how they feel, because they might just be scared. Yeah. There is the stigma. If we go to couples counseling, I get this all the time. Are you going to tell us we should get divorced or we should break up?
Mm-hmm.
And my husband asked that when we did premarital. He's like, are you going to tell us we should break up? And our therapist was like, nope, that's not my job. That's your job. And so just helping people understand, like, couples therapists don't find joy in being like, yeah, you really shouldn't be together. It's our role to help you understand that you have unhealthy dynamics or even, what's the word I'm looking for? Abusive dynamics if we see it. But I don't find any joy when any of my couples decide like we can't be together anymore or we've decided to divorce. I feel sad when that happens, even if I'm like, yeah, I don't know if you guys were going to fully work through these things because there sometimes is a lot built up over time, but no couples therapist finds joy in being like, yeah, you shouldn't be together. So that's never the role. The role is to help each person decide what they need, how to communicate that, and for both of them to decide that they can heal and repair or work on whatever is not going well in their relationship together.
So, you know, we have decided we're getting ready. It's our, you know, our first session is this week. What should we expect from going to a couples therapist? And I know this might be different from therapist to therapist, but just kind of in general, like, what are some things to expect? And then maybe what are the things that happen that they may not expect?
This is hard because I can only really speak to like the experience I've had in going to see a couples therapist with my husband and then my own experience. How I do it is it's a joint interview, that first session, and I like to hear the story of their relationship. Part of this comes from the Gottman method, but really hearing like how you met up until now. What are your views of what makes a good relationship versus a bad relationship? What did you learn about relationships from your parents? What was modeled for you? And then I'm always pulling in any questions that come up as I'm listening of, you know, oh, there's a communication piece there. Tell me more about that. Or, okay, what does it look like when you guys fight? Are you yelling? Are you raising your voice? Are you avoiding the conflict? What does your connection look like? What do you do day to day? I'm kind of trying to get the foundation or the baseline of the relationship to see where they're at currently, so I can create a treatment plan of here's the direction I want to take you. I'm trying to, in my own experience, I've done couples counseling twice, premarital, and then we went after having our little one and hitting a rough spot. And the premarital was really just kind of like, what are you hoping to get out of couples counseling? What are the top concerns or top needs? And then the second time I went, it was really just the therapist was kind of like leaning on us to kind of tell them what was going on, which I found was a little difficult because I come from this very structured approach. I'm like, okay, where's the questions? And they were just kind of that, I guess, the Freudian way of kind of leaning back and just listening. So I think you're going to find a handful of different approaches, but this is going to sound judgmental, but I would say a good therapist is asking you some curiosity questions. Tell me more about that. What does this look like for you? They're trying to assess kind of where you both are at currently in the relationship and where you want to go. What are those hopes and goals or the changes you would like to happen in your relationship?
And I could imagine there are some folks who put off coming to couples counseling because they're kind of afraid of what they might either learn or maybe really feel. You know, I think especially in long-term relationships or even, I guess, even new relationships, this could apply where, you know, you kind of just get into kind of a groove in your relationship, right? And even if you know it's not a great groove, it's sort of like we've just kind of been coexisting and surviving, and couples therapy is going to disrupt the even if it's not great, it's disrupting the homeostasis of our relationship or our family, right? So how do we help folks see that even if couples therapy is, you know, maybe it does kind of rock that boat a little bit, it still can be helpful?
Mm-hmm. So in my work, I always tell couples, like, the 60 minutes we have together is impactful, but it's what you do outside of the session that really changes your relationship. And so it's not necessarily couples counseling that's disrupting that. It's each of you deciding things need to be different or things could be better for us. And we want to make it better. So I just like to highlight that this is just a stepping stone for the relationship to changing and improving. And it's quite normal and natural for people to get into a state of just kind of going with the flow, not feeling super passionate or connected, because life happens and we forget how important those little things that we do often, how much they matter and impact our relationship. And so helping couples understand, like, you both kind of led yourselves here, so you can lead yourself out of it. But any change you make, I often compare it like building muscle at the gym. Building your relationship stronger, it's going to be painful sometimes. There's going to be soreness. There's going to be resistance to doing the work. And you're going to have to assess, do I want the quick fix or do I want the healthy choice that takes a little bit more effort, energy, and intentionality behind it? And it's not just the couple session, our 60-minute weekly or however often you're meeting. That's not where the change truly happens. It's what you take and how you apply it.
Yeah. And that application, well, let me ask you before I say what I think, but does that level of effort or application have to be exactly the same? And here's what I'm thinking, right? Like, one partner shows up and they are maybe more motivated to work a little bit more, and the other partner maybe isn't all that motivated to work as hard. Like, mm-hmm. What is the level of maybe the distribution of effort, both in therapy and outside of therapy, right?
I really don't think comparing your effort to your partner's effort is ever really helpful.
Yeah, it's good. But people do, right? They're like, you're not working outside of therapy, or you come in and you don't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where teaching them how to communicate what's going on is really important. I always start with communication, even if it's a strong suit of like, we're just going to do some psychoeducation here, because it's always good to improve. But I don't think both partners have to be on the same page. I think it's helpful when you are, but your needs are different. So if one of you is coming in really ready to do the work, to dive in, and the other one's a little resistant or hesitant, it doesn't mean that you're not going to make change or have that growth that you want. I teach a lot in what I do, because I do individual work too, of helping people understand that when you take ownership or that assertive approach of what you're needing and continue to invite your partner into supporting that, you begin to model a change in your relationship. And when we model, our partner starts to go, huh, what's going on there? It's a little weird at first, like, what are you doing? What's happening? But they start to see the impact it has on them. And they start to be curious and say, well, I want to do that for you. So there's a quote I love of, what you appreciate appreciates. So if you appreciate your partner, they're going to start appreciating you back. If you start taking a break when you're flooded in conflict, your partner is going to learn how to slow down too. And so this is kind of, I know there's like this image they talk about, like, you can't pull people up to your pedestal or where you're at, but you can model and say, here's what I did to get here. And I'm going to encourage you and help you if you want it, but I'm not going to try to pull you up to my level. I'm going to let you have your own process. And I think that's an important part in couples therapy is that people don't understand. They either come in and want the therapist to say like, they're wrong,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, it's never really like that. There's usually two people here involved and you both are right in your own ways, or you both have your own truths. So we've got to sort out that you're both individuals. And I find that's a lot of the work I do is helping people remember like, your differences is what attracted you and something along the way made them more of annoyance or frustrations.
Yeah.
How can you circle back and honor your differences and see the goodness that they offer and communicate when you're feeling frustrated by them or you're feeling annoyed, hurt? Because the goal is not to change each other. The goal is to change your relationship that allows you both to still be who you are at your core.
It's so good, you know, like realizing that I don't need him to change who he is. I need us to change this relationship that we have kind of become together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's hard for people to take ownership of that part.
Yeah. It would just be easier if he would just change.
It would be so much easier, so much easier, but it's actually so much more work where people realize if I just focus on what I need to change, it's actually more efficient, effective, productive, and the change happens quicker.
I mean, it's more liberating, really, you know,
way more liberating.
Yeah. It's like, I don't have to worry about him or her working through all of her stuff to change. It's like, I can control what I can control and that will impact my relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that that's for me, one of the biggest pieces of couples therapy is to realize like, I don't have to wait for anyone else to make a change, to make our relationship better.
Yeah.
I can be a part of the catalyst and there's real freedom in that, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it circles back to something you were saying earlier about how like couples work kind of translates into individual therapy or like the work with teachers or teens. What I love to help people understand is when you invest in your relationship, it has that compound effect and impacts other areas of your life. Mm-hmm. When you learn communication skills with your partner, you can learn how to communicate better with your children or your boss, your coworkers, your friends, your family. And so sometimes people are hesitant about the financial investment, but I like to call it that. It's an investment. And the work that you do here can have the compound effect if you allow it to.
Yep.
Because these are foundational relationship skills that we're applying to your intimate relationship, but can be translated throughout all your relationships. It's like the best bang for your buck.
it so is, you know, I just think, yeah, the financial investment in therapy, I think is always a battle that we therapists, you know, kind of have to face because people think, well, we're just talking like therapy and all the training we get is not actually, you know, it's not actually just like just talking, you know, it's like there's very real skill. And exactly when I show up at like, you know, a 5-star restaurant versus a fast food restaurant, right? I'm making an investment in the expertise of the person who's doing their job. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with therapy, right? Like, yeah, you could do fast food or you could do an expert chef.
Yeah.
What is going to fuel you? What is going to be the best long-term investment for your, you know, positive experience in life? So,
yeah, I think that highlights an important piece. You have to let the therapist do their job too, to have the impact you want.
Great.
And I experience this all the time of whether it's the resistant partner or both of them not wanting to realize they have to do work.
Yeah.
And like circling, and I hear it that it's like, we're not making any progress. And as gentle as I try to say it, trying to call out, yeah, we aren't, because you won't let me do my job.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always happen, but I think people don't realize you kind of have to get out of your own way. Mm. You have to have an open mind, an open heart. I call it the trial and error mindset. Give it a few tries. If it really doesn't work, we can move in a different direction. But you can't just try it once and like, yeah, that doesn't work. That's just not how anything works in life.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to have that trial and error mindset and be willing to to try a few things, and we'll get rid of the things that really don't work so we can find that plan that works for your relationship.
It's so good. I mean, there's so much good there. As we sort of wrap up, is there any last piece that you're like, I really want to make sure that I get this part out to folks so they can understand it?
I feel like we've been talking about it this whole time, but couples therapy doesn't have to be scary. It's scary in a good way because you're choosing to shake up your relationship.
Yeah.
And you're choosing to be vulnerable and say, there's something going on here that's not working, or the piece of, I want to be even better than we already are.
Yeah.
And that's really beautiful to do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be terrifying. And helping you understand, like, your couple's therapist finds no joy in naming what's not working for you. It's their role. It's their responsibility. That's what you're investing your time and money into. And so just keeping that in mind, they want to help you. They're there for a reason. And they probably don't have a perfect relationship either.
Yeah.
So you don't have to feel intimidated. Yeah. I try to do that in my work of like, look, I am a really good therapist. I am not always great at implementing what I teach. And I will totally take ownership of the difficult part of implementing these things. But I know that they have impact because every time I do it, I'm like, oh yeah.
That's why it works.
Wow. That was so much easier than the path I was going to try to go down.
Isn't it true? I mean, I'm that way with like parenting stuff. Cause I teach parenting stuff and I live parenting stuff. And it's like, yeah, if we would all know and be able to get our bodies to do what we know we probably need to do,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't struggle. Yeah. You know, and it's like we get stuck in, I think I know what I probably need to do, but I don't want to. I don't want to go and confront them about this. I just want them to change. I don't want to have to go see a couples therapist. I just want them to love me more. You know, it's like, I think we sort of like, we know on this one side of us, and then the other side of us is like digging our heels in, you know?
Yeah, you got me taking a post-it note down because I think this is an important part to help people understand is that there needs to be some surrendering in this process.
Yeah.
You have to be able to like lay your guard down and say, okay, I surrender to the change and transformation that could happen.
That's a big word for the very end of our episode.
Sorry, guys. I had to throw it out there. I'm writing it on a post-it note. So it impacted me. It's got to impact you as well.
Oh, that is like, that is crucial, right? I mean, I think, you know, for me, you know, I got chills as you even just said that it's like that word surrender. I think for a lot of us, particularly in the last couple of years, that has been really hard. And surrendering is the opposite of control, which is what I want. So it feels very scary to think about, like, not even just couples, but just like, yeah, to surrender to trust my therapist, to surrender to hear my partner's perspective, to surrender to say, I may not have all the answers and I don't know how to do this, even though I've read all the relationship books and I've listened to other podcasts on relationships. I have to surrender to being wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oof.
I know in my experience, though, every time I surrender, the solution, the next step, the right path becomes so much more clear. So even though I know how impactful it is hard to release that control. But to remember, you make movement quicker when you do.
Yeah. And it, you know, to your quicker point, I think about moments where I fought and I fought and I fought until I surrendered. And then it was like, oh, wow, that was a lot of fighting for no result until I just sort of let go. And I think about that in my spouse, in my kids, in my coworkers. I mean, I think about lots of ways that I have like fought against, you know, I'm using that term broadly, but, you know, like resisted the urge to say something, or I've let something go, or when I couldn't really let it go internally, but I didn't say anything, you know, or like, I don't know. I just think, gosh, if I would have just kind of let myself be open to a new process, which is, you know, essentially the surrender part, I could have really learned much quicker.
Yep. More time, more freedom, probably more money.
Oh my gosh. Good gravy. Okay. Rachel.
I'm preaching now. Stop.
I mean, I just like, I'm not sure we should end here. I think we need another 60 minutes and then bill me later. But okay. Rachel, tell people how they can find you and follow you on social.
Yeah, I'm at Rachel Alder Coaching on Instagram, and I show up Monday through Friday with tips to build your relationship stronger. I also have a free Facebook community called Building Stronger Relationships. So I show up there too. I do a weekly live that's usually 10 minutes or less because I like to make it quick and impactful. So I go there. The live time is changing, but I do go live weekly and then find different topics to talk about that are happening in relationships and just giving you some validation of maybe you're experiencing that, but also here's something you could do to change your relationship today.
That's great. And folks who know me know I'm makewordsmatterforgood.com and MWM with Kids on Facebook. And my other podcast, Kids These Days, Need Us to Make Words Matter for Good. Rachel, thanks for being here for all of this. I really appreciate both the logistical pieces, right? Like what can I kind of expect, but also like the deeper part and kind of normalizing these pieces that we all experience in relationships. And so what a powerful episode of things you learn in therapy. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What a great time. All right, everyone, until next time, stay well.